Everybody hear me okay? Thanks, fellas, for especially Chris, for inviting me to do this. That's an honor to be able to share my experiences with the vessel and being a captain over the years. There's some familiar faces in the groups that I've seen on board before. One of the ship inspectors is here today, so I won't tell him all the bad stuff we kind of got around, but I've been in this business now for over 38 years. And I love every minute of it. I love talking to people. But I'm used to being like this. Not looking behind me. So if you have any questions as we go through this, please feel free to ask out loud at any time. Don't be afraid to stop me because I enjoy everything about this. I've had three different vessels. Started with the Island Lass with Grant and Val Kent. You might know them. They own Liflock Cruises in Peterborough. That's how I was first introduced to this. Through my wife, recently just passed away, November 14th, and she made this slideshow up 4 years ago. So I'm imagine some of you fellas are in the same boat, but it's nasty, but life goes on. But she took over 3,000 pictures on this trip, and it's comprised of about 170 shots here, just to give you an idea what it was like. I also have with me today Captain Denise Chartier. She's my memory bank. Because mine's not so great anymore. And I'm going to probably lean on her a few times and say, what was that place's name? So, your wives, I believe, had me out for this, and they had a great time. They asked a lot of questions, and it was really, really fun with them. So let's see if this thing works. This is... here we go. I got that working. Okay. I'll just see if this keeps working. Most of you recognize this vessel as well, Kawartha Voyageur. I skippered on it a couple of times. But this was the actual trip from dry dock in Kirkfield. And we were waiting for the bob cage and lock to open up. Waiting to get through into the bottom side of Pigeon Lake. He actually starts early every year and runs the system. Last year he had a really bad time because of the high water. He couldn't get under the bridge down in Trenton, so they were just going back and forth from Peterborough up and down the system. Oh, I think I got it working this time. Here we go. So this is the motley crew. I'm on the left, the guy that looks pretty heavy there. I've lost about 55 pounds since that picture was taken. My wife is next to me, my grandkids, Denise and her husband, Paul Hayden. If you ever follow the wolf, you ever heard of Irish Paul? No? Well, if you ever hear the wolf, that's Irish Paul. Quite a character, and you'll hear more about him on the trip. Plus, we were joined by Ed Jones as well. So there's six of us in total on the voyage. By the way, guys, it took 22 days to get from where you see me standing there to Halifax, Nova Scotia. So I've eliminated a lot of stuff in between. There's a lot of locks. We went through 60 locks in total from the Canadian system. Am I standing in anybody's way here? From the Canadian system right through to the New York Canal system. There were two options. There was taking the New York Canal system or taking the Trent Severn Waterway, which I had to take to get down to Lake Ontario anyway. But the Skylark, most of you folks from Lindsay, you'll remember the Skylark. It was sold and it moved from... Peterborough through to New Brunswick. They took the St. Lawrence Seaway. It took them just over 2 weeks to get it there with a crew of four, and they ran it 6 hours at a time. Each skipper just kept running. They never shut it off. But when I heard the story of the tidal surge at the end of the St. Lawrence Seaway, I kind of changed my mind about going that way. They saw a white line across the horizon, wondered what it was. It was about a six-foot wave coming in with a tidal surge, hit the front of the Skylark and took the windows right out of the front of it. This boat I have is a lot higher than the Skylark. I wouldn't have had any troubles with it, especially after the experiences we had on the ocean, which you'll hear a little bit about. This is the Peterborough Liflock. I'm sure most of you are familiar with that one. And again, guys, if there's any questions, don't be afraid to jump out loud and ask. I put this in. Special thanks to Inland Inflatables. They're out of Toronto. They supplied me with an EPIRB. That's the life-saving beacon. If your ship goes down, it is activated by the water. They also supplied me with that life raft, which is a sea raft, one with a canopy on it, because ours up here don't have those. And we also each had to have a survival suit in case we did go down in the ocean. So this is Healy Falls. Locks are locks. There's some that are much nicer and a little different than the other ones, but this is two locks in one at Healy Falls. So that is the top lock. We've just dropped down through and we're now in the second lock. And if you've been on the Spirit, I don't know if you know, but we had an ice storm and it collapsed the roof, and then I restructured the entire top with a retractable roof, and that's what the roof opened. And then Rainy Falls, same thing again. It is two locks as well. That's standing on top of the wheelhouse looking down through the two locks. And at the end of the system, lock number one, Trenton. This was the final goodbye for the Trent Severn Waterway. And that's the gates opening up. This is the end of the Trent going under the bridge down at Trenton, out into the Lake Ontario and the Bay of Quinte area. Yeah, couldn't get under that one. And they might just have the same problem this year. They're pretty concerned with it. Again, we didn't take the St. Lawrence Seaway, so I did my homework. I checked the Erie Canal system, the barge canal right down through New York that way, through the Hudson River, which we're going to see here shortly. So this is a... I could have gone, if you will, to the port side coming out of the canal and gone up through to Kingston and then down around. But I chose to go up through the Murray Canal. It's a shorter route. And we went up through here. There's two bridges that move out of the way. Whoop, wrong way. So we went up the Murray Canal and up to a place called Wellington, which where we got up early in the morning and made our crossing of Lake Ontario. And this is the lighthouse at Wellington, the beacon to tell you where the entrance to the canal is. Lake Ontario, guys, we got lucky. Usually Lake Ontario can be pretty vicious. You can see it's as flat as pea on a plate, if you want to put it that way. This was May. What was the actual date, May? She's following me with her notes here. 23rd of May. Long weekend in May. That's when the locks opened up. And they got a few pictures of me doing what I do best. So we crossed straight over to a place called Oswego. That's the entrance to the Erie Canal system. Whoop. 9 hours. 9 hours. And that was the sun coming up in the morning, or going down, sorry, at the nighttime. Because when we got to Oswego, you'll see here in a couple of pictures, we have a problem. We had one person on board, and I made sure everybody had the proper documentation, but somebody didn't go and finish his. So when we got to Oswego, they would not let him off the vessel. They would also not let the vessel, they would seize the vessel if he stepped off. So we had to take him back to Ontario. 9 hours back. So I phoned my son, and I said, Chad, I need some help here. Put a boat on a trailer. You got to come pick up Paul. And I was pretty upset because this is just a waste of time, waste of fuel. Probably cost me about $1,800 in time and material and fuel and everything else to take him back. So this is about probably, I'm going to say probably about 9 o'clock at night, same day. And we're just off the coast of Wellington near the provincial park there. And my son met me with a boat. And you use your phone, the Pinterest on your phone. He actually was able to find me just by using my phone. So he came out to pick up Paul. But when he got there, we had a problem. He came to pick up my castaway and the rescue with the water pump problem in the rescue boat. The housing cracked on the top of the engine, and it was taking on water. So my son was bailing the whole time while my daughter was driving the boat to come and get him. So I put Paul in the seat. I put the bilge pump that I had, the hand pump, in the Spirit, which I shouldn't have done, but I set it in there. And I said, your job, Paul, is to pump water for the next 2 hours, because they got to get back. So they got it up and running. Paul, that's the castaway with the red arrow. We point him out pretty good here. what was his issue? You have to have, he has an Irish passport. And he didn't get the proper, I forget what it was called now, green card or whatever it is, to enter the States. So, needless to say, I didn't say goodbye. I said a few other things that the crew would remember. So this is us reporting back in. It's what they call a seaport. Not like C, it's A, B, and C. So a seaport, you call in. They have a camera in that box. You hold your passport up, they view your passport, and every crew member had to go through that. So I'm calling into Homeland Security for the second time now. This has already happened once, and this is where we found out Paul couldn't go. That's Oswego. Now I've gone from Ontario to Oswego. Now I've gone back almost within 2 hours of reaching shore and then come back. So we did that 22 hours it took us to get back. So we arrived in the middle of the night. We parked there. We were pretty pooped. Went for groceries, and we continued our journey. So this is the first lock on the Ontario side, and it's kind of a goofy system they have. You'll see that in just a minute here. The New York side. Well, the American side from on Lake Ontario. So this is the first lock we went into. Any of you fellas been through locks before in boats? You know the black cables you have on it? This is where it gets kind of fun. But if you look up at the top, I'll point it here with this thing. Can you see that thing right there underneath the bridge, that kind of a ladder-looking thing? If you can't get under that, you can't go through the system. So we pulled up to that. I did my homework, and I think we had about 4 inches clearance. And we were hoping for not having high water, so we got lucky. When you drive into these locks, they have ropes hanging down, not cables like we have in our locks. We were a little inexperienced there, but we've done locks before because we've been doing them here in on the Trent for years. We pulled up, and you'll see a shut slide here later on, but the ropes are not attached at the bottom. So I'm looking down at my wife. I said, grab the rope. So she grabbed the rope, and she put a rope through it, and the boat kept moving. So I said, well, pull up on the rope. So she pulled it up, and here's this big rubber thing hanging on the bottom. She says, what do I do with this? I says, hang on. And they let the water in. Man, did they let the water in. And so these ropes, even Denise, she was on the stern. She was on the aft line all the time. And they were talking back and forth up the side of the ship. What do we do with this? So we figured it out. You have to wrap it around your cleat, and as you're coming up, you have to keep pulling it tight so the ship stays where it's supposed to stay. And going down, just the opposite, you let it out. So that was another type of bridge we went under. This is life on board, dish duty. Captains aren't supposed to do dishes, but Denise was that day. That's Ed Jones. Some of you fellas might remember him. He lost his son in Bob Cajun back quite a few years ago where the wall fell on him. I don't know if you remember that or not, but he wanted to go on the journey with me. I'm glad he came. It was a really good time. Now, if you know anything about navigation, when you're returning to port or going upstream, red is right. Not in the U.S. Not on this canal. We started into this journey, and I'm looking at these markers, and they were far enough apart where you had red, green, red, green. And I thought, do I weave through them? Like, what do I do here? It's just something didn't seem right. So we had a guy going by in a little tin boat. I waved him down, and I says, what's with the markers here? And he says, oh, isn't this great? The only place in the world the red's on the opposite side. So we figured that out, and away we went. And, sorry? Who knows? Might have something to do with Trump. Hey, we got to rub him as much as we can. That's Ed, up through the manhole at the top of the deck there. He was up. He gave a daily feedback to everybody that was following us on Facebook and social media. Every day he got up on the top and did a gizmo there where everybody knew where we were and how things were going. But he was also looking for the bridges because I've never seen so many bridges in my life. That's with the mast down, and we only had 4 inches of clearance on some of the bridges. That's one of the higher ones. Their gates are kind of similar to ours, but they also have in each lock one of these guillotine gates. so they can shut the waterway off in case of emergencies. So we had to go under quite a few of them. Very well maintained. Something else about it, we pay an astronomical fee here to run the ship while we were here on the system. It was close to $6,800 a year to go through the locks on a continuous basis for the Corps of the Spirit. But when I got down to that first lock, he says, how do you want to pay? And I says, well, I'm going to be taking a few days to go through. He says, well, do you want a day pass? Do you want a two-day pass? Or a season's pass? And I says, well, how much is a season's pass? I really don't need it. He says, $50. I said, I'll take the $50 pass. I was kind of shocked. There's my wife. I wish she was here to talk to you guys about it, because she has a lot to say about this trip. And approaching another lock. Not at that time of year. Not that time of year. The canal was designed for barges, so the walls are not cement. They're all steel. They're all steel walls. This is Lake Oneida, going across in the system, and lots of shoals. We had to be very careful here, go out and around the shoals. That's the lighthouse at the opposite side, coming back into the canal system. More bridges, a little bit taller here. My draft was 5 feet. Yeah. This is about the only boat, I think it's the only one we met, wasn't it, Denise? I don't, was there further down? In the canal system when we first, this is the first boat we actually met coming out of a lock. But again, these bridges here, if you can't get under them, you can't get through the system. And that one there was another one we were worried about, but we got under it, no problem. And they look after the system very well. It's very well painted, very well maintained. This is my favorite part of the cruise. I sat in the wheelhouse for 22 days and they just kept bringing me snacks. Yeah, you're going to see that here shortly. Yeah. So again, more bridges, more control gates that go down and shut the canal off in case of problems. They can actually close that and drain that section of canal. We were 20 foot 6 and most of them were 21 feet. And there you go. Bridge after bridge. You can see three of them in that picture. Their tugs are all, everything is blue and yellow on the system. This is baby tug, mama tug. You'll see daddy here in a few minutes. And their barge system, this is their dredging barge. It's got a great big auger on the front. They just go along and chew it up. And then they hook a barge, a bunch of rafts with these pipes on it. And an excavator follows them along the shoreline, and they pump it up onto the shore, and he pushes it further away. That's how they do it there. So they look after it very well, but it's all done with pumps. And again, red on the left. I'm still heading upstream, but red's on the left. We stayed here. Anytime you head up a canal system, red is like when you come into Trenton. Red is on your right. You're returning to port or going upstream. No, because when you get to the top of this the system we had, there's three sections to it. So we went up this system, and then we get to a plateau, and then we start going down again to Troy, which on the Hudson River. So then that's when the markers went back to the proper way. It was just goofy. But this, I can't remember the name of this place. I think it was just the lock we stayed at. But the trains, oh my gosh, trains every 15 minutes. Long ones, and sometimes two at a time going opposite directions. Noisy place, but we stayed there for the night. And there's Daddy Ted, the big tug, the Daddy Tug. Governor Roosevelt, huge. And me doing my usual, make things work. We didn't have a rope long enough to reach way over to the big ballers they have for the barges, so we had to get a bunch of straps out and do the MacGyver. So here's this fella asked about the clearance. That's the water level right now at 21 feet. We're 26. And the next picture is one who was asking life on board. That's where we had our snoozes. And this is Susan. Remember I told you about the cable? See the rubber block right there? That's what's on the end of the cable. And here, that's the same lock I just showed you where the Governor Roosevelt is. That's going under the bridge. There's the clearance right there. That's the back railing of the ship. Yeah, we went pretty slow. I remember I sold the boat, but I didn't get the final payment till I get there, so I didn't want to scratch it. And they boast about one of the highest lift locks in the world. I'm glad they put it that way, but Peterborough and Swift Rapids are higher than this one. But we have a video of this one, but we don't play it here. There's Susan actually taking the video. So again, huge lock, guillotine. You can see the steel walls. And you get rained on when you go underneath. But this right here, that big white thing, that's the cement blocks that lift that gate to counterweight it. And this was our first fuel stop. I can't remember where the name of that place. Did we name it? She holds 600 gallons of diesel. 300 per side. And they call it the barge canal for a reason. We went by a lot of barges. From this point on, it was really nice. I really enjoyed this part of the trip. Right from Oswego down, I enjoyed it quite well. Your guess is as good as mine. It could be anything from cars to immigrants. Yeah, there were containers on that one, yeah. I didn't do it. Must be a sale on at Tim Hortons. So these are some of the... Each lock had a dam like this at it that they control the water levels at. And there were several of these. Very well maintained, always nicely painted. It was a real treat. Okay, remember my castaway? He was pretty apologetic. Called me on the phone. He says, "Is there any way I could meet up with you? I have the proper paperwork." So his wife drove him to a place called Amsterdam. And this is where he got back on the ship. His wife stayed the night and we left in the morning. And he continued the journey with us. He didn't get too close to me for about 2 days. And if you wanted something done, it was done right away. They just got over a big flood there. The waters, and we were dodging, I'm talking huge timbers, tree branches, trees. We were pushing them out of the way halfway down this system. This is just leaving Amsterdam, where you saw the boat in the last picture. There's the two queens on board. Of course, tea time. There's the castaway. This is Ed, Denise, myself. Ed was always looking through the binoculars, looking to see who we could come up with. My wife and I, again, another lock, same type of bridge. It was very nicely. And that's their towers, where they run them from. And right up here, my wife was a florist. She owned the village florist in Bob Cage. But these here were all flower pots on the side of the building. They were incorporated, but not too many flowers in them at this time of year. And we got to see some wildlife. Bald eagle. I'm going too fast here, guys. Just say so. The Erie Canal. I used to know, but I'm going to say at least got to be 400 miles easy. Yeah, we did it in 6 days, I think it was. 6 days it took us to get from Oswego down to New York. Oh, to Troy. Sorry, Troy, the last lock before we got on the Hudson River. There is, but with the Spirit, you just push her and keep going. We're nowhere near the speed limit. Some of the barges actually passed us with huge tugs. And this is me contemplating, did I rake the mic decision or not? A little history about the boat, guys, while we're going through these. It was built in 1964 by Hike Metal in Wheatley, Ontario. Its first name was Miss Muskoka, so it ran in Bracebridge in Gravenhurst for 2 years. It and the Lady Muskoka were taken to Expo 67, and they were both run down there. This one never came back. It was sold off to Frontier Tours, who ran it at the base of the Niagara River at Niagara Falls for Frontier Tours for probably 7 years in there somewhere, and they changed the name to Miss Niagara. So you might have been on this vessel somewhere in that point of time. You just never know. From there, it went to an auction. The Frontier Tours went bankrupt and went to auction, and a fellow by the name of Mike Hayhurst bought the vessel out of Buffalo, New York, at the top of the Niagara Falls. And he brought it back. They renamed it Miss Buffalo. It ran there for 32 years. This is the top of a place called Waterford going down. There's six locks here. This is really interesting. I'll finish this and then I'll continue with this. Mike bought the boat, ran it for 32 years, put it up for sale. But when he bought it, he didn't realize, because of the Jones Act, he had to run it in U.S.-Canadian bordering waters. He could not just run it in the U.S., was what he was hoping for. So when he sold the vessel, his only hope of selling it was to sell it to someone who was going to do the same thing, or a Canadian that would take it back home. I was that Canadian. So we brought it back and renamed it the Kawartha Spirit. So again, this is a series of six locks, and they're all water aquifers. So down each side, it was really nice going through here. The locks were really deep. And Denise was going to go in and make some tea here at this lock while we were going down in it. And Susan told her, don't get too excited. We got five more locks to go, because she couldn't see what we were looking at the front. So that's the top of that one there. Now you can see we're going down to number five, and the water on each side is running by on each side continuously. It's quite a drop. And then you can see three more there in a row. There's number four. Apparently it is fairly busy, because there are a lot of boats that transfer up and down it during the start of the season, but we were right when it opened. A lot of pleasure craft. A lot of the boats you see that come through the Trent Severn Waterway here are all coming through this system if they're flying American flags. At Lock 4, I've never seen a dry dock this big in my life, but this is a dry dock from the side of the ship. We're looking over top of the bank there. They flood this whole, like a lake. But they bring all these boats in at a time, they do all the work on them, and then they flood it and float them out. So the lockmaster was really great there. He said, come on, I'll take you over and you can have a look. So he took us over, and this is us just walking back. Then number two. And then Waterford. This is the bottom lock. We're now on the top of the Hudson River, but we still have one lock to go. We stayed here the night. We did a grocery run. Notice the captain still driving. Yeah, they don't charge you to stay overnight, though. Yep. Very seldom we paid a fee to stay overnight. And you can see there's a bit of a tidal change there, not much because of the way the dock is floating there. But that's Denise's husband. I did the drive, and he's carrying the bags. This is the last lock. Going down through, no cables, nothing to hold on to. We went into this lock, and it's fairly long, as you can see. And it only drops, I think it only drops about 5 feet, I think it was. It wasn't a big drop. But I said to the fellow, where do you want us to secure? And he said, just keep driving. So I just kept rolling down through the middle of the lock. By the time I got to the other end, the gates were opening, and out we went. So now we're on the Hudson River. There's tidal currents from the ocean all the way up to Troy. And they run fairly consistent with I tried to do my homework the best I could to figure out when's the best time to go. And it was right in the morning when we left. More bridges. Now they're getting a little higher. We're not having to worry about it too much, because all the freighters and stuff come up this river. Huge tugs and barges. We had to wait for a couple of freighters that had to turn in front of us to get into docks. There's the castaway doing dishes. Now, he was pretty helpful, all things considered. Now, if Susan was here, she'd be telling you about this site. She put this in here. Ed saw a nice boat with a yellow bikini on it. So notice the three guys with the binoculars. True story. She screws pretty straight when you're not looking. Now, we traveled at about, on flat ground, no current, we traveled at about 8 miles an hour. So this is with the current coming out of the Troy Lock, with the tide going to New York. So we're running at about 10.2, and there's points where it went up to about 14.6. Lots of little lighthouses in the Hudson River. Old lighthouses. Pretty neat to see. And guys, we had phenomenal weather. Just phenomenal weather. We were in t-shirts in May. It was just unreal. This is Denise's husband cooking breakfast and stuff for us. He had a little thing set up on the back deck there. Kept us all alive. More bridges. Lots of bridges. No. Oh, GPS. Right in the unit itself, yeah. On the left, over here, it's hard to see it in this picture, but that's a castle. I can't remember the name of it. We had a brochure that we picked up in Waterford that told us all the names of the different bridges and where we were heading and what it was. But this was an old, old castle. Pretty cool. Sure, most of you have heard about West Point sometime in your life. We went right by it. Guys going along in platoons, jogging up and down the shoreline, helicopters flying overhead. It was quite an ordeal. And when we got down to the bottom of the river where we started heading towards New York, we were boarded by the Border Patrol, the local sheriff. And I figured we were going to have problems here, but we didn't. These guys were really nice. Asked where we'd stayed the last night. Didn't quite clue in on that, but I found out later what it was all about. And they checked everything out, checked the logbook, everything was good, and away they went. This story will continue in a minute. This is the first glimpse of the New York skyline. That is approximately 5 miles out from the Statue of Liberty. A couple big cruise ships pulling out in front of us. Yeah, I'm going to say it was almost a mile across in most locations. Ferries running everywhere. There was more rough water on the other side of that cruise boat. You can see the Statue of Liberty from here, right there. There was more rough water when we got past those cruise boats with all the ferries and that running. You would think you were out on the ocean because all the different boats. That's Manhattan, isn't it, Denise? Yeah, Manhattan. Just watching other vessels because they were going in every direction. And in that situation, the vessel in the canal has the right of way, but the ferries also have some type of a jurisdiction when they're crossing over. So you just have to be really careful. And you can see I had two sets of instruments here. I had GPS and the one that actually the vessel owners that bought the vessel sent me a whole unit to put on with radar, the whole nine yards. So I had two radars, two of everything. Now, when we were going down here, we found out later that that ship right there is a Canadian ship being refitted underneath that canopy. And that boat right there was a police boat with a machine gun and a guy sitting on the front with hands on the gun. And they were chasing people with lights and sirens while we were going by to keep away from that area. I don't think they would have hesitated to shoot, because they were zooming everywhere, guys on Sea-Doos, they were chasing them out and stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah, it was Fleet Week or something. Empire State Building from the Hudson River. And this is where things got a little interesting. We needed a place to stay. We'd been pushing it all day long. We got there about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, so we stayed at this place. Yeah, we can put you up, no problem. just pull up over there, tie up, we'll bring you a cable down. So we got hydro, got everything hooked up, stayed the night. That's the new trade center. And then the next morning, trouble arrived. This was two sheriffs and a border patrol fella, an Asian fella. He was the biggest Asian I've ever seen. He was huge. Didn't want to argue with him. But they boarded the vessel, wanted to see all the documentation, wanted to see everybody's passport and everything. And make a long story short, no one ever told me, or nor did I ever see in the documentation, that I had to call in every night that I set a rope on a dock anywhere in the United States. Even if I went from that dock to a dock across the river, I had to call in and say, this is where I am now, and report who was on board. I didn't know that. So he come on, and he rode me up and down. He says, it's a $5,000 fine. So I got my fur up in the back of my neck, and I started to argue with him. I said, you know, you got to give a guy a break here. We did everything we thought was right, done everything right. He says, but I need to know where you've been. So I took out my logbook, and I had every minute documented when we went in or out of a lock, stopped, anywhere. So this is what he gave me. A CBS ports code and CBP marine desk telephone numbers. So you have to take that with you, and wherever you pull in, you have to find the nearest number, call in, report where you are, how many people are on board, and that way they know where you are. Well, that's what I thought they would, but because I was on the telephone, never talked to an actual official. It's just their rules and regulations. Any boats that's transversing through the United States or out through there and staying in port has to... It's the same as landing in Toronto. You have to go through customs when you get off the airplane. It's the same thing. As soon as you set foot on it, you have to clear customs. It's just... Oh, it was a stupid rule as far as I was concerned. But anyway, we every night from that point on, I let them know where I was. Yep. Well, I had one on board that was bad to start with, remember? We keep going back to him every now and then. So there's Lady Liberty. And if you don't believe how big she is, or if you've never seen her, look how small the people are. So we went over to see her in the morning. Oh, by the way, when I went to pay the bill for where we stayed that night, he says, that's $680 for an overnight stay. I said, I just want to rent the dock for the night, not buy it. There's Susan and I. Statue of Liberty in the background. And guys, it was so hot when that day. You can see we're in t-shirts again. It was so hot. Even the Statue of Liberty had trouble. Remember, my wife put this together. So that'll give you an idea how big she really is with the boats in the background. That's off the starboard bow of the port bow of the Spirit. Staten Island ferries, constantly on the move. By the way, I'll go back one. These boats here, right here, there's several of them. They take you over to the Statue of Liberty. It's $60 U.S. to take that trip over and back. They take 2,000 people a trip over and back, and there's like five of those boats. So somebody's making some good bucks. Brooklyn Bridge. It's kind of a neat structure. They're actually talking about making it into just a walkway now for people to walk on. And that's looking back. We are now in Long Island Sound. So we're actually going up through Hell's Gate. Quite a current there too. I was only moving at about 6 miles an hour right there. The tide was coming in from the top end of Hell's Gate from Long Island Sound. And this tug passed me with a huge barge. I was talking to him on the radio. asking him what he thought of all the lobster traps. He says, oh, we just drive over them. Because they're everywhere. From nautical miles, it's 1.8 to kilometers and 1.2 to miles per hour. There's the Bad Boy Motel, Rikers Island. More snacks. Oh, they were great. And this was about the most dicey dock we stayed on. I was afraid to tie up to it. In fact, we all walked off at two at a time just in case it sank. This was Dolphin's Cove in Bridgeport, Massachusetts. And that's what I did every time we stopped. As soon as we threw a rope on, I got my cell phone out, I got the book out, got the logbook out, logged what time I come in and phoned these guys. And my advice was from the actual guy to get the guy's badge number and who I called into and his name. You wouldn't believe the hassle. If I phoned you up, for example, and say, I'm here tonight at Bridgeport, or at Massachusetts, I'm at such place, and could I get your badge number or your name for my logbook, please? I told him, I've been told to do so. He says, I'm not giving you my name. He says, and I'm not going to give you my badge number. And I says, well, you're going to have to hang up on me until you give it to me, because I was told to get it, and I am determined to get it. So they finally gave in, but they were just ignorant. So that's that same dock looking from the restaurant we stayed at. No, they didn't actually. No one actually. The only one that stopped me was that first one. They were right in the river. They asked us to woe up there for a minute, and they boarded and had a look around. But everything was to code. Everything was done properly. And that's what it was like the next morning, and for the next 7 days. So it was totally by instruments. That's what it looked like off the bow in the morning. Couldn't see nothing. Now, lobster traps, we renamed them landmines. I'm not kidding, guys. I've never seen so many lobster trap buoys in my life. To the point where we would see one, try and steer away from it, and it got to the point where it was a pain in the ass to try and steer away from it, so we just drove over them. But every time I come to one like that, I would go to neutral. The castaway would run from the front of the boat to the back and lean over the back and, yep, it popped out, back into gear, and away we go. There was thousands. There was more than thousands. They were everywhere. Tidal currents. This is where it got interesting here in Massachusetts. That marker buoy, fairway marker, was off to my starboard side by about a quarter mile, way off in the distance. And as I got closer to it, I thought, boy, that's getting awful close, awful quick. And then my wife grabbed the camera and took a picture of it going by the back of the boat while the tide was coming off the shoreline. It was pulling us out. A few fishing vessels. Oh, yeah. Yeah. We're going up through Long Island Sound. This is Stonington. We stayed here tonight. We got our laundry done. They had nice showers there. They had laundry facilities. These might seem like silly little slides, but they were really important to us when you've been on a boat for 5 or 6 days at a time. And then we found this place, and these people were pretty good. My wife and two of the crew members went up. They were all seafood lovers, so they went up to this place, found it. And they had a little cash box. You know how we get corn and stuff at the side of the road? Well, you could pick up lobsters, anything seafood from this place, and just leave your money in the box. Make your own change, make your money in the box. So they picked up a whole bunch of stuff there, and we had a nice meal that night at the restaurant there at Stonington. That's everybody on the crew except me. Or was that everybody? That's everybody. Yeah, all six of us. That was the sunset there. And when we got to Stonington, I had to weave through all those vessels to get into that dock. And the other thing we learned, when we went to these different places at night. You'd phone in and say, we're 65 feet. Sorry, we don't take that size of a vessel. So I kept lowering the size. When I went into Stonington, they wouldn't take a 65. So I phoned them back. I had phoned them back 2 hours later and said, we have a 55-foot vessel. Will you take us? Yep. So we went. So we lied about the length of it every time we had to go into port. Fiddler's Cove, this is the bottom, the top of Buzzard's Bay. We stayed there for the night, and this is the entrance to the Cape Cod Canal. I asked the people there, tidal currents, what's the best time to go through? And he said, be at that bridge at 7 a.m. I was there before that. But the current was coming out through, and you could see it. And as I went under that bridge, it started and turned around and went the other way. So we only took us less than an hour to go through the Cape Cod Canal. And that is the speed limit there, but I was doing 14.8 and having a hard time steering because the water's going faster than the boat. This was different. How do you say this, Denise? Gloucester. Something like that. What she said. If we hadn't have gone through here, we'd have spent an extra day and a half going out and around this point of land, a huge point of land. And we didn't know it was low tide, but anyway, we went through here. And when I went through this bridge opening, they turned the green lights on, and in we went. And Denise and Susan took a bumper on each side and held it over the side, port and starboard, and the bumpers just missed each side going through. And that's what the tide out. I was kind of worried when I saw that we're going to do some churning up something here, but we were fine. And this place here, Newburyport, Massachusetts, the Merrimack River has the craziest tidal currents in the world. I didn't believe it till I experienced it myself. Those ropes there, you could string them like a banjo string when the tide goes in and out, that are holding the boat to the dock. When we went in through the break wall, the tide was coming in. I could see a sandbar directly ahead of me and a red marker off to my starboard side. And as I rode the wave in with the boat, I tried turning it wouldn't turn. So I popped the starboard engine into reverse, throttled the port, went up full throttle, turned her hard to starboard, and I just made it around the marker. Otherwise, we'd have been on the sandbar and had to wait for the tide to go back out. Kenny Buckport, this is where President Bush, his son, resides. And we were there on a full moon, the highest tides of the night. Notice the pole with the orange tops. Highest tide of that year, that night, was 12 feet 6 inches. Yep. Yeah, it was just unbelievable. And this is after we docked, went in, we went in shopping a little bit and looking around. Tide's out. My wife loves lobster. That was her first lobster on the trip. She was happy. Notice where the pole is now. This is when we got back. This is only like 3 hours later. It was above the ship before. That's me standing at 10:30 at night, 11 o'clock. This is my only place that I was concerned about. There was hundreds of lobster traps here, and those aren't rocks you see on that island. Those are seals. So where there's seals and salt water, what else is lurking? Sharks. I was having kittens that I would hook up to one of these lobster traps and have to get in the water and cut the rope off. But anyway, we made it through, no problems. And if you ever watched the movie Forrest Gump, when he went to the East Coast and he put his feet back in the water, this is where it was filmed, right here. No cell service. Nowhere to stay. They put us on a mooring ball, and then this guy came out with a boat and took us in to see if we could get the phone work, because I'm paranoid now that I have to call in every night to make sure I don't get that $5,000 fine. Plus, it would have been more if I hadn't have called in, because I'd already been warned about it. So I'm coming back here, and I've already got it in my mind. We're leaving now. This is, 5:30 at night, I think it was. Wasn't it Denise in there somewhere? Yeah, 5:30. So we're departing Port Clive, 5:30, 5:50 p.m. Can't see a thing because of the fog. So from here, instead of going to Bar Harbor the next day and then crossing over to Yarmouth, I decided to go right to Yarmouth from here, straight across. Another 22 hours of nonstop. Got a little rough. I had to duct tape the wheels on my chair so I wouldn't be banging off the walls. And that wasn't the roughest day either. We had to tie the roof down because it was slamming around. And there we are in Yarmouth 22 hours later. We were pooped. Well, I think we got there about, 2 o'clock in the afternoon? Something like that. But the tide was pretty brutal there, too. There's 40 feet right there. You're looking right over top of the boat from standing up on the wharf. And that's the castaway down at the bottom. More lobster. Notice the castaway's not in that picture. He's taking it for me. I'm a nasty captain. And again, next morning, what do we got? Fog again. This vessel here was a bunch of young fellas. He built the vessel. And there was, I think, 3 groups of young people on board, and they were traveling to Nova Scotia as well. So we met them on 2 or 3 occasions. But they were sailing it. Remember the food that they all bought at that place in Stonington, all the seafood? This is Ed cooking it up now. Off the coast of Nova Scotia, there's a lot of these old lighthouses that would to give you warnings of reefs, and they're all over the place. We basically every morning went out 25 miles straight out and then started our journey up. Captain Highliner's salmon farm, we went by this. The fish were jumping in there. They raised the salmon right there. They're all in cages. And this is Shelburne, Nova Scotia. We stayed there for the night. This was kind of comical. We got a place on the pier. Didn't cost us anything, but there was a hospital ship there that was moored for the night. But it's like small towns. Hey, there's a new ship in town. Let's go down and have a look. And the pier was wide enough you could drive your cars down it, turn around, drive it, turn around and come back down and have another look. So it was funny. While we were in the boat, the tides are going up and down, and the cars are driving down the dock, and they're all looking through the windows at us. And I'm talking 200-300 people with just a constant line of cars coming down to see this boat. And this is where I met a gentleman. He asked me if I'd been sailing long, and I said, well, depends on where you mean, but on the ocean? No, this is only about, I forget what day it was then, but anyway, I said, we've only been out here for about a week and a half. He says, well, there's a storm following, which is, I forgot to tell you, we had a storm following us the whole time. It was coming up the eastern seaboard, and it was catching up to us. It was going faster than we were going. So I was concerned with that. And we got talking about it, and he says, well, when you go out of here tomorrow, he says, it's going to catch up to you. He says, if the seas get to be where they're 8 seconds between crests on waves, so in other words, we go in the ship, go up onto the top of a crest, ride down through the valley, and then come back up onto the next crest. If you can count 8 seconds, he says, you're okay. He says, when it gets to 5, he says, get the hell off the ocean. So we left this place in the morning. We were running pretty high 18-foot rollers up and down. We had to tie everything down. Fire extinguishers were ringing like bells, banging off the walls inside. It was pretty up and down. I thought Denise's husband, if he had a gun, he was going to shoot me because he didn't like it at all. But we started out, and at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, it was getting really bad. It was like getting close to that 5-second intervals between the top of the waves. And I had 2 hours to go to get to Lunenburg. Thank you. So I made the decision, instead of going into Port Oliver, to continue on for the next 2.5 hours. It was a good decision, but there was a few people on board weren't happy about it. So we made it to Lunenburg. And that doesn't look rough, guys, but it was pretty bad. For those waves to be crashing on underwater rocks, they were sticking up pretty high. So we made it to Lunenburg. The storm came, and we stayed overnight for 2 days. When the storm passed, we were ready to go in the morning. Whoops. The Blue Nose parked right behind us. That's about the best picture I have of the ship at Lunenburg. Tidal things were an issue there because the boat was constantly going up and down. We had to tie loose lines, and you have to get to the shore. You had to push, stand on the lines, pull the boat in, and then go up the ladder. You see with the green post there, that was a ladder. And because we stayed 2 days, my wife loves knitting wool. She got to know the owners on a first-name basis. That's me going, are you done yet? This was the morning we woke up to go. Beautiful morning. Picture of the two of us. And this is what Ambassador's Tour sent me as a crew. Captain Polly. He was older than dirt. Mitch and Matt. So I was supposed to, they were supposed to meet us 3 days prior to that, but they didn't. So they had to kind of learn everything in the last couple of hours that we, it wasn't hours, it was a full day leaving Lunenburg to Nova Scotia. But the story behind this whole thing, fellas, I didn't want to sell the boat. I wasn't ready to sell it, had no intentions of selling it. At a convention in Halifax, the Canadian Passenger Vessel Association, I was approached by Dennis Campbell from Ambassador Tours. He says, and he had a sister ship. There was 11 of these boats like mine made. And he had one of them. And the seawater had just killed it. It was done. And they were looking for a second to replace it with the ship. So this is how this sale came about. But he came to Kirkfield in the wintertime looking at the Pioneer Queen in Toronto, which is another sister ship of this one. He says, I'm going to look at the Pioneer Queen. I want to look at yours. And I said, well, it's still not for sale. He says, just entertain me. He says, let me come look at it. Everybody talks about your boat. Let me look at it. So he came up, him and his mechanic and his manager, three of them. We spent the entire day up there freezing our rear ends off. I figured we'd go for an hour, everything would be fine. I didn't dress for it. I was shivering like crazy all day. We got back in the car, and we started talking for a while, and he folded a piece of paper up, and he wrote something on it. He says, I know you say it's not for sale. He says, don't open that piece of paper. He says, I put a figure on there. He says, if you don't agree to that figure, I know you don't want to sell the boat. But he says, there's also another stipulation that I'm not going to say until you either agree or disagree. I kind of got my curiosity going, so I opened up the paper. First thing out of my mouth, I guess you bought a boat. Yeah, steel hull. And I said, so what's the stipulation? You have to bring it to me from here. I have to sail it to Halifax. And I want it there before June 15th. So I said, well, according to weather conditions and stuff, there might be problems with that. But I said, agreed. So this is how this trip all came about. So this is the final approach to Halifax Harbor. That's Theodore Tug. I'm sure you've heard of that boat or been out there and seen it. They own the Sandy, the Theodore Tug. They own four or five vessels. They own a tall ship. They also own the Harbor Hoppers, you know, those ones you get on and they go in and out of the water. And it's quite an operation. But they wanted the Spirit to take the place of the Haligonian. So on the way there, we had a contest to name it. Not us, they did. A radio station. And they came up with the name Maritime Mist, which is... They wanted to call it the Haligonian 3, which is what somebody is from there. I don't know the actual terminology for it, but from that area they're called Haligonians. And I didn't really like the name, but hey, he bought the vessel. What am I going to do? So to make a long story short, we dropped it off. The name stayed the same. That fall, Ambassador Tours phoned me up because it went to dry dock. They wanted to ask a few questions, and Mary from Ambassador Tours said to me, she says, I got good news. And a couple of questions. And I said, well, let's hear the good news first. She says, we're not going to rename the vessel. She says, since you dropped it off, we've had nothing but people talking about it, wanting to go on it because of how you ran it and what you've done in this area. So I'm not patting myself on the back, but I must have done something right. Because to this very day, people are still going out there. Hey, I got married on that. Hey, we had a party on that. So that's the final approach. And that's her new home, Murphy's Cable Wharf, right there. She's parked on the other side of the red building. So if you ever go out there, guys, tell them you worked on it. You get a free ride. Just tell them Randy said to say so. And that was a sober morning. That was a sober morning. This is the last time I turned the engines off. It was very emotional for me, as well my wife and for the crew. Denise has been with me for quite a few years. And that's her new home. Yeah, I wouldn't do it again. We just had to lash everything down. Anything that could move had to be lashed down. There was stuff sliding all over the place. If you tried to sleep on an air mattress, you were on the floor. Cost me $26,000 to sail it there. He works for us. Not something else about us. My son and I own a company called R&R Houseboats in Kawartha Lakes Marina. So I'm in business with my son in that. So he worked for us there, and there was nothing going on in the wintertime, and he really wanted to go, so I invited him along. I'm not 200% for sure on how that actually works. Maybe, do you know anything about that, Mike? The Jones Act? Yeah, that's it. I forgot that, Sam. Yeah, but it's not. It was a Canadian-built ship.
I think the engines are going to install water as well.
No, they run water through them. There's units they put in them for salt water. Yeah. This is Captain Polly, the guy that took over my position and ran the boat for them. If you went and saw the rest of their vessels, my wife was very, very concerned about the bathrooms in our boat. She wanted them to look pristine all the time. So we did marble walls, ceramic floors, mirrors, nice porcelain units, everything. And this guy here, when he got on the boat, he went and got all the other captains from all the other boats. He says, you got to see the bathrooms on this boat. Ask Denise, he was just crazy about it. Anybody come in, he's, come here, see the bathrooms. You got to see the bathrooms. And that's Denise laughing at him right there, because that's exactly what he was saying. And that's Dennis from Murphy's Cable Wharf. That's the owner of Ambassador Tours. He treated us to another lobster dinner. And that's Susan and I saying our last goodbyes to the ship. And that's the crew getting in, getting a ride back. Susan and I stayed 2 extra days for Transport Canada inspection and changeover and all the rigmarole that goes with that, right, Bill? Or right, Mike? And that's what she looked like after we cleaned her out. That's where we lived for 22 days. And we loaded everything in a U-Haul, and Susan and I drove back. And then the final delivery for me was November 5th, 2016. I had to take the cradle that I used to have in the Kirkfield lift lock that this boat sat on for dry dock. There's nowhere or nothing that will lift them out in these areas. So Kirkfield, if you're ever up at Kirkfield, even if you go up there now, now's a good time to go because the Kawartha Voyager is sitting up there. You'll see where that cradle was up in the front, and that's what it sat on. So I bought a trailer from those guys that make those houses, you know, like Canada Builds, and I welded the cradle to it, and I towed it with my one-ton truck all the way to Halifax. Slightly illegal. And that was my last goodbye. I went back and checked on her in Bedford Bay. That's it.